What's up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe Does Christmas. Yes, that is right. It is the series where we're counting down 24 Christmas films for all you lovely people. And I'm Jonathan, of course, one of the hosts. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie McLean.
Hello there.
So on this episode, we will be taking a look at 1954's Christmas musical, White Christmas, directed by Michael Curtis.
Lord help the mister who comes between me and my sister, and Lord help the sister who comes between me and my man.
The two greatest figures in show business, Bing and Danny, as two ex-GIs who form the perfect partnership. Rosemary and Vera Ellen as the sisters who have them in a spin. With Dean Jagger as the unemployed general they take under their wing.
Apparently, there's still quite a bit about show business I don't understand.
Oh, it'll come to you, sir. Just takes time. We wouldn't be any good as generals.
You weren't any good as privates.
A wonderful story that will warm your hearts, just as the breathtaking scope of a new screen wonder will widen your eyes. White Christmas in VistaVision.
And you'll fall asleep, counting your blessings.
While you're dancing, things that you would not do at home come naturally on the floor.
Handy, there's a minister handy, and it sure would be dandy if we let him make a fee. So don't you linger
your day.
So, yeah, first oldie, I think, to appear on a podcast. I've got at least another one. And I'm glad to say that it was great. It was a great idea to include some of these older Christmas films. In fact, I think there's at least another couple coming up. But, yeah, really, really should be watching more of this type of cinema when we have a chance.
Yeah, look, we've not done that much older ones. This, I think this is by far the oldest one we've done so far on normal or special ones. 1954, Jesus, that's even older than Jonathan.
funny. Yeah, that was
joking. That's true. That is true, but like, it's
a lot older than me.
Yeah, a lot older. It's a lot older than both of us, to be honest. Yeah, I think. Before this, it was probably Planet of the Apes, which was the 60s, so I think this is by far the oldest one to do. I've not watched too much of, like, 50s from this, like, sorry, movies from, like, this decade, that was what we were talking about. Movies from the 50s and stuff like that, so yeah, it's, I've been interested in seeing films from that time, so I was intrigued by this one, and I wondered how it was going to be, and if I was going to like it or not, because I don't like all the type of... Some old Hollywood films I don't like, and other ones I don't really know. I've not really found ones that I've really been super into, but I have been quite happy about this one. I love this one, I'm not going to lie, I really enjoyed it.
That's strange, ladies and gentlemen, because Kenzie is not a fan of musical films. Which is strange.
Yes.
But you really like this one. I think this is like the most musical film I have ever seen, I think. I mean, I like musicals, you know. I don't really dip my toe into older musicals, and after this, I might. But some sort of recent musicals, like it was ones in the last sort of 30 years, yeah, I've been a fan of. So yeah, I do quite like a musical film as long as it's good. I mean, this film is actually really, really good. And yeah, it is actually quite enjoyable. I quite like it. Like, we were talking prior to recording, they just don't make films like this anymore. And it's a shame, because the golden era of Hollywood was the golden era of Hollywood for a reason. But I suppose things, technology advances and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I can remember getting shown clips of old films at college and stuff, and seeing them on like YouTube videos, or you know, you maybe want to watch something that you've, that's maybe piqued your interest, or you know, you've seen a 3-minute clip, but so maybe sit down and give these older films the respect they deserve and sit and watch the full length of the film, specifically if something piques my interest, you know. I think I'm going to personally go and do a deep dive in Hitchcock at some point in the near future.
See myself doing that as well, to be honest, yeah.
I want to see what the fascination is about him and his filmmaking style, but also this era of cinema, and he's kind of one of the bigger names. Let's not digress too much. We're not here to talk about Alfred Hitchcock. Far from it. We're here to talk about White Christmas. Yeah, it stars Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye, Rosemary Clooney, and Vera Allen. They're the sort of four main characters. You've got Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye play Bob Wallace and Phil Davis. Wallace and Davis? They've got their own kind of sort of entertainment production company sort of thing. And then you've got Betty Haynes and Judy Haynes, played by the two female leads, their sisters, and they have their own sort of double act that they perform around the sort of country. So yeah, that's kind of the nuts and bolts of their characters. But the film, I wasn't expecting the film to start in the war.
Yeah, that caught me off guard as well. Did not see that coming at all. And I was like, wait, is the whole film set around this time? I had no idea. So yeah, it was a bit bizarre for me.
Yeah, the film opens in Christmas Eve 1944, when the troops are, you know, in the sort of height of World War II, and, you know, Bob Wallace and Phil are captain and private in the 151st Division of the American Army, and they put on a show for the soldiers, which actually quite quickly features the titular song, White Christmas, which I was a bit surprised about as well, but it's probably a fitting place to put it, specifically, you know, Mr. Bing, given everything he's got. Bing Crosby's really good. I'm so familiar with this type of music, though. My gran loved it, so yeah, all of these kind of era singers, very familiar with, and like, again, it's very different from the music that we get today, so it's also quite nice to hear these kind of songs as well.
Yeah, I really like the music in this film. My biggest issue with, like, kind of modern musicals and stuff like that is that I feel like all the songs are kind of samey and they don't really stand out, which you don't... Well, this one, it's, you don't really get. Maybe some songs sound slightly generic for its time, but they sound great. They all do. And mixed with, like, the dancing in this film as well, which is also top-notch and really enjoyable to watch. So, yeah, it's just... It's good to watch a musical with good music, if you know what I mean. Or, like, not even, like, it's just passable, at least. I think most of the songs in this film are top-notch. Some are really good. There's some standouts for me. What's it? It's the one about dancing. What's that one? I can't remember what it's called. It's the song about the best things come when you're dancing or something like that. That whole scene with
the best things happen while you're dancing is the song you mean.
That was my favorite from the whole film. I loved that whole scene with the dancing was so fucking good. And I quite liked the song, and it was very, so much of this film, I caught myself just kind of smiling, just like, I'm really enjoying this for like no reason. It's just fun and happy and enjoyable, and you just don't get that anymore. I would like to see a film. I don't know how it would work, but I'd like to see someone try and make a film like this now. Because why not?
I think you could, but it's no surprise that the when you say the music's passable, I think that's a bit of a dig. The music's more than passable. The music's fantastic. And it's no surprise. I'm going to mention a name. Irving Berlin wrote all the music and lyrics in this song. Kenzie won't know who that person is, but people listening will. He's a very famous music composer. So yeah, and it's unsurprising as to why the music's so good. Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very well-known and well-regarded songwriter, specifically of this era as well. So yeah, incredible. Which, do you know the funny thing about this film is the titular song, I mean, the film's based on a song which featured in another film, which I think is really bizarre when you say it out loud like that. But yeah, the song White Christmas initially appeared in the 1942 film Holiday Inn, which also starred Bing Crosby. But then they obviously decided that it should have its own movie 12 years later. I'm glad they did. I've never seen Holiday Inn, so I don't know how good the film is. It's probably just as good as this one, if not better. But yeah, maybe check that out at some point. I was initially thinking about featuring Holiday Inn on this list of films over White Christmas, but Holiday Inn spans a whole year, whereas White Christmas is more focused around Christmas and this holiday season. So I thought it was more apt to put on the list over Holiday Inn. So yeah, things I like about the film, I just like the way old films look and the nuts and bolts of it. You don't get films like this anymore. There's a lot of big set pieces. Spoke about that on the Grinch podcast. Like, that doesn't really happen anymore either, and it happens in this. I think people could get, I'm not saying get bored of the film, there's a lot of moving parts, bored's maybe the wrong word, but as soon as they get to the sort of lodge, the film kind of pretty much stays there for the whole time. But there is, I suppose, a build-up towards that before we actually get to Vermont. Do you agree with that? Or you really like this film? But I mean, like, as soon as the action got to that location, it pretty much stayed there. There is some bits when one of the girls goes back to New York, and there's that part, but it kind of pretty much stays at the pine tree in Vermont.
Yeah, it hits a point and it kind of stays there. This film's just about, 2 hours long? 2 hours and 1 minute, round about there? It's kind of on the dot. It's
exactly 2 hours long.
Exactly 2 hours long, yeah. How I feel about that is, I think the first hour is quite a bit better than the second hour, although I still really like the second hour of the film. That's what the first hour was really strong. And yeah, there's a lot more kind of is going on, it feels like, in the first time of the film, because they don't even arrive at Vermont until probably 30, 40 minutes in. So yeah, once it does hit there, Jonathan is right, it does stay there. But it still has stuff to give.
I mean, you don't get to see one of your sort of favourite parts of the film, the song and the dancing, until you're in Vermont. You know, that's kind of the crux of it. What happens is when they get to the hotel, they bump into the old army general.
Yes.
The major general, who I'm guessing is the proprietor of the hotel, and didn't look as well, they were expecting it to be snowing in Vermont. That's the whole thing. Go to Vermont and there'll be snow. When they turn up, it's like roasting hot for that time of year. It's all not the way it's meant to be. and the Haynes sisters were going up to be like sort of the variety act of the hotel, and the guys followed them, and it eventually gets to the stage where they go, well, how about we try and get an audience in to the hotel? So they bring their own show up to Vermont, and that's where you get all the rehearsing and you see all the sort of bits happening behind the scenes. Yeah, I mean, it's a really enjoyable film. And then there's, I suppose, the second half of the film, there's other sort of story arcs kind of coming to play, you know, where the general really wants to go back into the line of duty, but you can tell that he's way too old to be even considering that. Also, there's the whole thing with the engagement stuff with the couples that they're trying to. That's quite a weird part of the film, where two of them fake being engaged to try and push the other two together, and it kind of backfires in a weird way, and then eventually just ends up with Bob just doing a nice thing. He wants to get all the soldiers back, and eventually they all turn up, you know. It's just a really, really nice film. Like, it's just, it's such good, so good natured. It's really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, I like it. Everything about it is just nice. All the characters in it, they don't even really have a bad quality, which in some certain things can be not great, but in this, it works perfectly with the film. Like I said, half the film I was, a lot of the film I was just watching Kiss Smile, and I was really happy how they ended some parts of the film and stuff like that with certain characters. I felt like it was a really happy resolve for it with the general. I felt that was just really nice. I really like the dynamic between all of the characters, mainly the main two, Bing Crosby and the other guy that I can't remember.
Bing Crosby and the other guy, Danny Kaye.
And they get, yeah,
Bob and Phil. Or they get called Wallace and Davis. It's quite weird if people of that era got called by their surname rather than their first name.
Yeah. They were so good together. Like, I really, I thought they were quite funny. I just think they worked together really well. I always enjoyed seeing scenes with both of them in it. It's great. Really liked that. And of course, their singing is top notch as well. That's the thing. I love the sound of old Hollywood. You know, kind of like, don't even know what it is. Well, once it goes into this song, the song just sounds old, and like the voice, I don't know what it is. Some, maybe it's under the microphones, I guess, because the microphones are older. It just sounds so good. Sounds great.
I was going to say, it's funny you should say that you like the chemistry between Bing Crosby and
you're
Danny
Kaye. They get along together.
No, well, Danny Kaye wasn't meant to, he wasn't like the first choice for the part.
Was he not?
No, it was meant to be, Fred Astaire.
Oh, right.
Who, this would have been their third film together, Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire. They were in Holiday Inn, which where White Christmas came from, and a film called Blue Skies. But Fred Astaire declined the project after reading the script, apparently.
Really?
And he asked to be released from his contract with Paramount. I don't know why, but yeah.
He really didn't like that script. Interesting. Yeah, that's weird. I don't know why that...
It seems as if there was more complications than not. Like, apparently, Crosby also left the project for a brief period to spend more time with his sons after the death of his wife.
Oh, right.
But then he returned to the project. Somebody else, an actor called Donald O'Connor, was signed to replace Astaire. But just before shooting began, O'Connor had to drop out due to illness and was eventually replaced by Danny Kaye. This is the behind the scenes of the movie business that nobody ever really knows until you go and read about it. And you go, that's quite bizarre how he was essentially third in line for the part, but actually it works really, really well because they have a really good on-screen dynamic.
Yeah, I'm glad for it because I thought they were great on screen together. I've got a few other kind of little kind of somewhat gripes for the film. I'm not gonna say I like I said I did really enjoy this film. A lot of the songs are reused. Not a lot. Well, it happens more than once with certain songs at times. I mean, the White Christmas one gets played at the start of the film, gets played at the end. That's fine. But there's ones like the sisters. They have a song about being sisters, which is played at least 4 times through the film, and all kind of quite close to each other. It's a bit much because they do the song, and then you've got like a buffer period, then you've got another song, and then you've got Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye then reenacting the song, but it's the exact same song. And then later on you hear a bit more of the song when they then play it somewhere else. So you hear the song a lot. And it happens for certain other ones. The other ones get brought up as well, like the dancing one kinda comes back at certain times. But usually it's not the whole song. It was that song in particular. That kind of caught, kind of noticed it played a lot, and it's like, okay, I've probably heard that song enough now, but once I kind of felt that with it, it was never played again, which was definitely for the best. My other little thing about this film is, kind of in the middle of this film, I kind of forgot that it was a Christmas film. I don't know about you, but it's you could forget. Until you get to the end, you could forget.
Like I was saying, the snow and that doesn't appear until the end of the film. They do make reference to it, the time of the year it is, obviously, a few times in the film, but obviously it's not overtly Christmas in terms of, well, there's snow outside, there's loads of decorations, stuff like that. But I get what you're saying. But it is definitely a Christmas film.
Yeah, definitely. It's just at some point, it's weird because the first kind of like before they get to Vermont, it has a lot of kind of have a Christmassy feel to it, quite a different finds when they're singing about snow, stuff like that, and then you hit Vermont and it's not. I think that's maybe the whole point, is it? So it kind of almost kind of loses that Christmassy feel, but then at the very end, it puts it in like all, it's like comes full frontal with the kind of Christmas theme. With them all in like the red jackets and the snow, it even starts snowing.
Well, that I think that's the whole setup to White Christmas and his song. I mean, there's a whole, I don't know what you call this, but the start of the film's replicated at the end of the film, in a very different setting. They're not in a war zone; they're at a hotel in Vermont, but it's done very, very similar, if not exactly the way it was. But the general at this point is kind of acting the way he did, but obviously in the first scene of the film, that's the way he is, because I mean, they're in a war zone and they're kind of putting on the show, and he's very doom and gloom. But turns out, like most people, there's a man behind the front that you see, and we get to see that in this film. But no, I think you have a point that it's not overtly Christmas in your face, specifically like some of the films that are going to feature on the list, or most of them are probably going to be overtly Christmas, quite a lot of them. But there's going to be others which people will go, is that really a Christmas film, or is there enough elements, or is it on screen enough, you know, and people will argue that. But no, I mean, it's definitely a Christmas film, but I do see where you're coming from.
Yeah, it's not, to be honest, it's not really a complaint. I kind of, in a way, it's, I'm more just looking for stuff to kind of try and nitpick with the film, because like I do think there's not really much wrong with this one. Sometimes it's better not to have the whole Christmas thing shoved in your face, and I think it actually does work for this film quite well, especially in its final act.
Yeah, some of the other sort of, what would you call it, facts about the film. Paramount put up $2 million, a $2 million budget for the film. Ended up grossing $30 million domestically. It was a massive, massive hit when it came out. I think the split was Bing Crosby and Irving Berlin got 50% of the proceeds and Paramount took 30, and I'm guessing the other 20 maybe paid for X, Y, and Z or cast, or I don't know how it would have worked, but yeah, it's strange how Bing, obviously, he was the draw, he was a star, big name at the time, and Irving Berlin wrote all the songs and the music, so you would imagine he would get a big slice of the pie. There was a big thing about VistaVision at the start of this film, and I don't even know what that is, and I'm still not quite sure I know what VistaVision is. It was like a new process at the time.
It's on the poster.
Yeah, it's on the poster as well. I think it's something to do with you get twice the surface area of a standard 35mm film. So it's used to yield finer grained standard 35mm prints. I don't know, it's a widescreen process developed by Paramount, so obviously Paramount put the money up, so they were maybe using this as a test for, I don't know if it died out. We haven't, like I said, we don't watch loads of old cinema, so it might pop back up. But they made quite a big statement about this. It's a bit like having Wonka Vision on a Wonka poster, you know? Wonka Vision doesn't exist, but I mean, I don't think Vista Vision exists anymore. Everything's obviously moved digitally, but it'd be interesting to see how long that lasted for. Yeah, it's one of those things, and I think they already had built in IP with the song. I mean, the song had been out for 12 years, like I said, it featured in a film 12 years before that, and probably was played at Christmas every year since then. It's quite funny. One of the Haynes sisters couldn't actually sing. This is quite funny.
Interesting. Is that the one that dances a lot?
So Vera Allen, she was actually dubbed by Trudy Stevens.
All right.
But Rosemary Clooney actually did sing. Apparently, Bing Crosby improvised a lot of his dialogue in the film, which is kind of neat. It's quite cool. I quite like people going ad-lib off topic. Well, not off topic, but just improvisation. If you've got that skill set, why not? It was the first film released in a new format. There you go. That's probably why they were touting it, because it was the first film to use it. And like I said, it was a massive, massive hit, and it was the biggest film of 1954. Some fun facts to round out the podcast. So I think that's us. We've spoken enough about the film, of what is lyrical, said what we like, and I don't think there's much to dislike about the film, so that's why we've just had a bit of a chatter about it. So we'll now swiftly move on to the ratings. Do you want to take this one?
Yes, I do. I'm very glad that I watched this film. I really enjoyed it. This has probably been and I think this will probably well be the biggest surprise to me of how much I liked this one. I was expecting to find it like all right or not very good. I don't know. Or just be like, not for me. But no, I genuinely really, really liked this film. I don't see anything really wrong with it. I love it. It's such a nice film. I'm going to give it a 4.5. I feel really strongly.
Whoa!
Bringing
out the big guns.
I feel really strongly about this film.
Caught me right off guard.
I really like it. This is probably going to become an annual watch for me.
I didn't expect this at all. But
especially the first half of the film, I was so into. Genuinely. Really enjoyed it. I recommend it. I really do. Watch this film this Christmas. If you haven't seen it, it's worth it.
Yeah. I totally agree. You should definitely, if you haven't seen it, and there'll be loads of people maybe listening to this that haven't ventured back in time for Christmas films, and they maybe haven't seen it, but strongly recommend going out and watching it. I think it's currently available on Sky, or Now TV, I think.
In the UK, yeah.
In the UK, it is. I don't know where it is available in America. We are obviously Scottish people, so we know where to find things in the UK, but that's about it. This film's still really highly rated. 77% fresh rating in Rotten Tomatoes, 88% audience score, 7.5 in IMDb. All the metrics that we normally look at, Rotten Tomatoes being the main one, hasn't really dipped a lot. I mean, 77% is still very strong. Audience score's really quite high as well. I'm really, really shocked. It's kind of caught me off guard with my own train of thought about what I was going to give this since Kenzie went so high. And I'm trying to put it into perspective. But like we always say, things are subject to change. I really enjoyed this film. Probably not as much as Kenzie did, but I really, really enjoyed taking a jump back in time and seeing some golden era Hollywood cinema. And it was really enjoyable. I'm going to give it a 3.5, but hold that for a minute or two, because that could get bumped up. This is going to be one of the first few podcasts that get released, and like we've said, we've done this in the Halloween special. If you're listeners, if you've listened to that, thank you, I appreciate it. And yeah, we kind of juggled some about at the end when we'd done our final top 10 list, so I think it's a strong 3.5 for me. It probably might end up getting edged up to a 4, but right now I'm just going to stick with a 3.5. I think that's where my head is at the minute. But yeah, I still recommend you go and watch it. If you're a fan of musicals, you've probably already seen it. Or if it's one that's slipped by you, definitely go and check it out this holiday season. So yeah, I think that is it for another episode of the podcast. It's been a pleasure as always. And yeah, we've got about 50 episodes out now. So if you want to go, if you like this and this is the first one you listen to, go and check out some more. We enjoy doing it. We hope you enjoy listening to it. As always, you can find us on all podcast streaming platforms just by searching Cult Film Cafe. If you're listening, you already know that. And if you'd like to go and give us a wee follow over on social media, that would be much appreciated. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Cult Film Cafe. So yeah, it's been a blast. This one's been a bit of a different kind of film that we don't normally do in the podcast. But it's been an absolute pleasure to talk about it. So yeah, it's a goodbye from me.
And it is a goodbye from me.
Podcast out.